You are listening to the cycling podcast at the Giro d'Italia in association with Rafa. Today we are in Milano.
Cozze ci tene, cozze, cozze vicine, non spigudeci ancora, non spigudeci ancora. Cozze ci tene, cozze, cozze vicine, non spigudeci ancora, se non mangiano le femmine.
Where are we, Daniel?
Piazza del Duomo, in Milan.
Baking hot, the stage is underway. There will be no tale of the tappa tonight because the tappa will unfold over the course of this episode. And we're at the sharp end of the race just now, Daniel. Just seen Bob Jungelsdorf, so not long till we have our showdown between the top, well, four or five.
Well, we're standing next to the palm trees, Richard, the infamous palm trees. I want to talk about the palm trees because it's been a bit of a national scandal in Italy that palm trees were planted in Piazza del Duomo a few months ago, and the sort of right-wing political groups objected. They said that this was pandering to African immigration, and that they were trying to turn Milan into Africa, an outpost of Africa, and they got burned down, the palms, but they're back, and I'm very pleased to see them back.
Well, you're not saying that actually that was also a misunderstanding, because the palm trees were here historically.
Apparently, there were palm trees in Piazza del Duomo about 100 years ago, 150 years ago. So, you know.
So we've started this most thrilling final stage of a Grand Tour ever with a little botany, some politics thrown in there as well.
We've had a few complaints over the last few days. We've talked about cycling too much. I warned you about this a few days ago.
Well, we've also talked about whether or not peacocks can fly, and thanks to the many of you who've sent us messages, including my dad, confirming that peacocks can indeed fly.
And he's just ridden past. Did you see him?
Who, my dad?
No. The peacock. The peacock just rode by, no doubt on his way for another TV appearance, maybe the last one of the Giro.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't count on it, Daniel. He actually finished about an hour ago, but he's still going around here looking for people to talk to. We're just trying to not catch his eye. So listen, Daniel, we're waiting here. Obviously, a lot of the lower place riders have finished. We'll hear from quite a few of them in this episode. We've got a little compilation coming later with some best of moments from various writers, protagonists, journalists. But as I say, we're going to let the stage unfold over the course of this, well, certainly the first part of this podcast. One of the riders who finished quite early was Rory Sutherland, the Domestique, a Movistar. We've seen him at the front a lot over the last 3 weeks, working for Nairo Quintana. He finished the stage, and I caught up with him just past the finish line. Rory, a very tough Giro.
Yeah, really. That was my fourth Giro ever, and super hard.
The hardest, do you think?
For me, it was. You know, I think for the level of competitors, yes. Got a better field here than a lot of the times in the Tour de France. So that creates a different kind of race. For us, we came here with a super strong team, but you know, at the end, we'll find out today what happens.
Well, how is Nairo been? I mean, a lot of talk about whether he perhaps suffered more from the crash that he had than he's let on. You can tell us now. Has he been maybe not quite himself this last week, do you think?
I think the days after the crash, 2 days after the crash, is always, you know, the day after you're kind of all right, but second day it's always not the best. You crash the day before the rest day, so you've got a rest day to kind of get into it. And he, like everyone else, you're positive and you try your best to make sure that you're going to be all right. I think the day after that, the Stelvio day, while he tells us that he was not feeling good all day. If you're climbing like that and you're not feeling good, I think that's pretty good for me.
It's all relative, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
You were here last year with a team that was led by Valverde, and I remember you saying it was a lot of fun, that you know that he was always very positive and upbeat. What's it like with Nairo? How is he different as a leader?
You know, he's younger. He's a little bit quieter, a little bit more demanding in different areas. Alejandro has got so many years of experience and confidence that it does bring the stress level down a little bit. But that's just person to person. It's not better, it's not worse, it's just different. They're two different people. You know, Nairo has more of a chance to win this year than what Alejandro kind of probably did last year, which of course then raises the stress levels for the whole team as well.
So finally, what's your gut telling you? What's going to happen today?
I don't know. Everyone's got their own gut feelings, but there's all these spreadsheets going around, and there's all these, like, per kilometre this and that, but at the end of the day, it is what it is. It's whoever's got the legs, and yeah, on paper, Tom is definitely the strongest time trialer of the peloton here, but nobody knows how he feels. You know, he might have a fantastic day and put 5 minutes into everyone, or he might not be feeling the best and Nibali could be in the jersey, or that's why it's a think it what makes cycling such a beautiful sport is that it can come down to this. You know, it's pretty cool to see, even though I wish we were 10 minutes ahead.
So you'll go and glue yourself to the television now, will you?
Yeah, I'll go have a beer and relax a little bit, and it'll be a heated moment in the team for sure. And we all hope for the best, but at the end of the day, if Tom gets it, whoever wins today has done the best job for the last, you know, the last 3 weeks, and all respect to whoever that person is.
That was Rory Sutherland we heard from there, and that's Tom Dumoulin underway. Daniel, he looks like he's grown a beard overnight.
No, I didn't. Apparently he had problems with his earpiece before he started.
Yeah, so he's now out in the course. He's chasing Ilnir Zakarin, with still to come, obviously, Vincenzo Nibali, Thibaut Pinot, and Nairo Quintana. And out in the course, Bob Jungels is already about 14 seconds up on Adam Yates. So as Matt White predicted in the podcast last night, it's very likely that Jungels will take white jersey for best young rider. Fernando Gaviria is the confirmed points winner, and Mikel Landa, who's just finished, is the king of the mountains. So Daniel, main guys all through the first time check, and it's pretty much as we expected. Tom Dumoulin's second fastest, Jos van Emden, is in the clubhouse as the race leader, but Dumoulin just 2 seconds down, and crucially 31 seconds faster than Nairo Quintana.
I like the golf analogy, Rich. Usually come from me. Yeah, we could say that the others are dormy. Now, you won't know what that means. Tom Dumoulin is dormy up. It's in the bag, isn't it? It's in the bag. It should be in the bag. But apparently he's taking a lot of risks on the course. Well, there aren't too many curves. There aren't too many corners on this course. But those that there are and those that there were in Monza, he took on a quite aggressive line. So watch this space.
You were saying, Daniel, that the gear choices are quite different. Dumoulin on a 58 tooth ring, Pinot on a 55 tooth ring.
Well, not only that, but I think Tom Dumoulin's got an 11 smaller sprocket and Pinot's on a 13, so there's a huge difference.
That is, yeah. I mean, Pinot, we expected, he didn't do a good time trial in the first one, but he's looked good the last couple of days, but he's not on a great day, I don't think. He was 26 seconds behind Dumoulin at that first check, and Nibali was pretty good, 17 seconds down.
Yeah, Nibali is doing comfortably the best time trial of the three sort of outsiders at this point, Quintana, Nibali and Pinot.
This reminds me of watching the final day of the 1989 Tour de France, where it was a two-horse race, Greg LeMond and Laurent Fignon, and when you watch that, one of them looked very fast and the other one didn't. The other one was clearly in a lot of pain and shuffling around on his saddle. That was Laurent Fignon, and LeMond was super aero, helmet, tri-bars and everything, and it was almost obvious to see. Here, they all look pretty good. No one's having a really bad day. Just a further point on the stubble that I spotted earlier. That was an old cycling superstition that you didn't shave on the morning of a time trial. Bernardino used to swear by that. So maybe some of the old timers in the teams have passed that bit of wisdom on. Let's come back when they start to appear in the distance. I'm standing on the finishing straight here, just waiting for Tom Dumoulin, who is certainly the virtual Maglia Rosa now. He looks very much like he's going to win the Giro. First Dutch winner of a Grand Tour since Joep Zoetemelk in 1980, when he won the Tour de France. Could have a Dutch stage winner as well, because Jos van Emden is still the leader. Let's see what Dumoulin does. Here he comes. Second fastest for Dumoulin. But will it be enough to win the Giro? I suspect so. Jonathan Vaught is actually on Twitter, just said that on a time trial like this, flat, not very technical, the first time check is usually a good indicator of how the stage is going to go, and I think that's how it will have proved. The noise can only be for Vincenzo Nibali. He hasn't won the Giro, but he's done a hell of a ride and he should be on the podium. Crowd getting very close to him in the closing kilometres there. Some nervous moments. Now we await Nairo Quintana.
Nairo Quintana!
Daniel Nibali and Quintana on the podium, waiting for Tom Dumoulin. More importantly, are we going to get the song, do you think?
I don't think so. The Dutch fans seem to be far outnumbered by the Colombian fans. This usually happens at, well, not just Grand Tours, but every race nowadays. There are more Colombian fans than anything else. There we go.
Well,
we could start it ourselves. Dumoulin. Tommy Dumoulin.
Oh, it'll take more than that, I think.
Where's Dino when you need him?
I know. So Dumoulin, not just the first Dutch Grand Tour winner since 1980, but the first ever Dutch winner of the Giro d'Italia.
Yeah, quite amazing when you consider the history that Holland has had in the sport. I think it'll be the first of a few Grand Tours for him, maybe the first of many. I think the problem, we talked about it yesterday with Thibaut Pinot, when someone's won the Giro, like Tom Dumoulin, it's kind of difficult to convince them, I think, to forsake the Giro in future years and focus everything on the Tour. I'm sure he will do that, but he might do it reluctantly next year.
I spoke to Gilles Simon, the cycling editor at L'Equipe, as we were waiting for the riders to come in, and he thought that they needed a bigger podium for this particular Giro. Here's Dumoulin now.
My name's Rob. I work at RAFA as a sourcing lead. So I've got two cycling challenges for this year. One is riding 10,000 kilometers. The other is riding 500 kilometers in 24 hours. At RAFA, we do the Vestive 500. So I attempted that last year on the 27th of December. Little did I know, it was actually the coldest night of the year. It was about -5 degrees. About 3 hours into the ride, my vision started to go blurry. And it actually turned out that my corneas were starting to freeze over. So I packed that in, pretty upset, disappointed. So I vowed to do it again, probably going to try it on the summer solstice, so longest day of the year.
The RAFA Cycling Club is the largest global community of its kind. Members share their passion for the road through rides, events, exclusive club kit and racing. Find out more at rafa.cc.
Thank you very much to RAFA, our main sponsor. We paid a visit to the RAFA pop-up clubhouse in Milan this afternoon before all the action. Highly recommended. Open to the end of June. At the end of the Giro, what is that you're drinking?
I'm drinking a Spritz Milanese, not to be confused with a Spritz Veneto. The Spritz from the Veneto region is with Aperol, and it's orange, and this is the typical one from Milan. It's with Campari, and it's red.
It's got a sort of pinky hue. So I thought it was sort of your little tribute to the Giro.
Well, later, Richard, I'm hoping to take you to a trattoria milanese, maybe have a risotto milanese with saffron, famous risotto from Milan, and maybe some ossobuco, bioshin, isn't it, with risotto milanese. But you don't care, do you? You'll shovel it down. Anyway, let's get back to the cycling.
No, I won't, Daniel. I'll enjoy it. I'll savour it. What's been your best meal of the Giro?
Wow, we're straight into the culinary chat. Quite an important time trial took place today. But anyway, what's been my best meal of the Giro? Oh, there have been too many good ones to remember. We've had some sublime meals. Had some good bigoli last night. Bigoli all'anatra. We stayed near, in the end, I thought we were staying near Brescia, but we ended up staying near Verona last night. So duck, sort of spaghetti, that was very good. But Rich, I'm going to have to, I need to sit down, reflect.
Well, can I just say that my favourite meal was also to do with the ambience, but the meal that we had the next table to Dino Zandagu in that little bed and breakfast in Tesero, which was just before the Dolomite stage, wasn't it? The night before, and that was the best meal. That lovely wholemeal pasta, delicious. Lots of melted cheese. Yum yum.
Not sure about your Lionel impression.
Anyway, okay. So the dust is settling. Tom Dumoulin. Well, we've just sat through his press conference, in which Dutch journalists already ask him if he's going to move to Monaco or Switzerland, and you get a little insight there into maybe how life is going to change for Dumoulin, because I was asking a couple of our Dutch colleagues, you know, what this will do, whether it will just make him a big figure in the cycling world or whether his fame will transcend the cycling world and he'll be one of sort of Holland's best known sports people. And they were very much of the view that, you know, that this will catapult him into a position that he got absolutely no idea about at the moment. He will become a very famous Dutchman.
I think these things always depend on context and what's happening.
And personality.
Yeah, and personality. What's happening in other sports. The most popular sport in Holland is football.
Wow.
The Dutch football team is not doing well at the moment. Has not been doing well for a long time. And I'm not sure Holland have that many world stars in other sports.
Speed skaters.
Yeah, so Dumoulin has all the requisite qualities and attributes you would think to become an absolute megastar in Holland. And I think life will get a little bit icky for him in some respects. It will become difficult. He said tonight in his press conference he hoped he wasn't walking or he wasn't getting stopped in the streets of Maastricht in future. I'm sure he will be.
The butterfly of Maastricht. He'll need a
new nickname.
He'll need a new nickname as well.
And Rye, Italian TV, suggested that they call him the Doctor, because he began a medical degree, didn't he, a few years ago, didn't finish it. But, yeah, not the best nickname for a professional cyclist, given the recent history of the sport.
Context, again, Daniel, when we step back and look at this Giro, you get so wrapped up while the race is on in the day-to-day stuff, and you move on. And even the incident, which I'm going to mention again, and a few people have asked me not to keep mentioning it, but, you know, he lost 2 minutes that day that he stopped for to answer a call of nature. He lost 2 minutes and he still won the Giro. He still won a Giro that had, we reckon, the best field for years.
Yeah, I think everyone's got some kind of excuse or reason why they didn't go well on a particular day. I mean, we heard Nairo Quintana tonight talk about how he had been ill in the last week. Thibaut Pinot was slightly ill in the last week as well. You know, how much time would that have cost?
And you've been slightly ill the last couple of days.
Yeah, slightly under the weather, just 80%. I would say, of my full power. So I think that's neither here nor there. Dumoulin, to my mind, has been a quite emphatic winner, quite a convincing winner. He's definitely won a la pedal. This victory carries the promise of a lot of further successes, I think, in Grand Tours. You know, although this route was heavily weighted towards time trials, so it certainly had a lot of kilometres against the watch, it's still been a Giro d'Italia. It's still been a race with a lot of 2,000 metre plus climbs, a lot of very hard climbs, a lot of climbs in the last week. And this has not been a quirky, gimmicky Grand Tour, which a time trialist happens to have won. This has been a real test of every discipline of cycling.
It has. Yeah, it's been a terrific race. You spoke, I think, to Dumoulin's sports director, Aki Vispeek, at the finish.
I did. Obviously, pretty raucous mood in the Sunweb camp. It was quite hard to tie down the riders, the team managers. They were too busy celebrating. But Aki Vispeek did speak to me just beside the podium in Milan this afternoon.
We talked about having good legs or bad legs. He said everybody has bad legs today, and it's one thing, and that is the mentality, the mental part of it, that you keep fighting. Did you turn it around? We knew also in the last part that the heat was going to be an issue. He did it fantastically. I mean, he stayed focused and he kept fighting, and that is what he needed to do today.
Aika, when you packed your bags and came to Sardinia 3 weeks ago, did you in your wildest dreams think that you'd be fighting to win this Giro?
I was kind of expecting that we would be close to the podium when we hit it off in Foligno, and everything went pretty okay until then. But of course, we lost Wilco, which was a big loss. But after Foligno, I knew that there was a realistic chance that we would be fighting till the end for the victory. But I was not taking anything for granted.
So it was Aki Vispeek. One thing that we should, I mean, a lot of comments about Dumoulin's apparently quite weak team, although he was very fulsome in his praise for his team. But they are a team who I think a lot of neutral cycling fans support. I mean, it's nice to see one of the smaller teams winning. I don't think they have, by any stretch of the imagination, one of the bigger budgets in the cycling world. I mean, they lost John Degenkolb over the winter, who was a real sort of marquee rider for them. They're not a huge budget team. It's their first ever Grand Tour. They've evolved over the years from what was Skill Shimano and been through various guises. But I think they're a team in which a lot of people have a lot of confidence, and in which people like us journalists like to deal, because they're very open and always very happy to help with whatever queries you have, etc. They're very, very accessible. What's happening now, Daniel?
I don't know, but so we've got a group of people working for RCS, the organisers, celebrating the end of their Giro. And just on the table next to us, on Somewhere Bridge, they're a team, we talked about this earlier in the Giro, they're a team that really likes to lay out long-term plans for their riders, and they've done that with Dumoulin. And yeah, it's often greeted, that, well, the plans that they do formulate are often greeted with some scepticism, you know, four-year plans, five-year plans, we're going to make Tom Dumoulin a Grand Tour champion in 3 or 4 years. You know, it's quite heartwarming that in this case it has worked. And that's with, I think, quite a threadbare. I'm not going to talk about the team necessarily at this Giro, but just the squad itself. You know, I think it's a 25-man squad. They are really stretched to the limit by the World Tour calendar. They've had a rider here, for example, Phil Bauhaus, a German sprinter, ostensibly, who they were probably quite dubious about his chances of really winning any sprints, but they brought him here. A couple of other young riders. And I'm not going to say that Dumoulin has won in spite of a couple of weak links in his team, but it's been a struggle at times. And, you know, just speaking to a couple of team managers in recent days, they've said that maybe Sunweb were a bit too keen to prove that they were strong in the early part of stages, in the first 100 kilometres, and they've tried to ride really, really hard, and they've not had the luxury. What we see in a lot of big teams now is a rotation system whereby the best domestiques, they'll ride one stage hard, and then if they're not feeling well the following day, they'll be rested, and their direct supporters will say, right, you take it easy today, but tomorrow we're counting on you. And Sunweb have not been able to do that.
Well, yeah, and yet one could say Movistar didn't do that either, and that
they
was perhaps
their
undoing.
Not.
If we saw in the last couple of days, the two riders who were Quintana's best allies, Gorka Izaguirre and winner Anacona, obviously Andre Amador as well, and he was pretty consistent. But Izaguirre and winner Anacona, the last couple of days seemed to really become quite fatigued, and they weren't able to. I mean, Quintana said Friday's stage was the one where he hoped to really press home his advantage, and Dumoulin had a bad day that day, and Quintana wasn't able to take advantage of it. Part of the reason for that was because his team was found wanting that day as well a little bit. We've got a lot of interviews to rattle through, Daniel. One other, just final comment on Somewhere. You talk about the way they rode and the way they perhaps went very hard in the first 100 kilometres. A lot of that is inexperience as well, I think. They will learn, as well as Dumoulin himself.
I'm sure they will grow with him.
Will learn a lot from this experience. Let's hear from somebody else. A rider we haven't mentioned, but who's had a sort of quietly impressive Giro, Jan Hurt. Czech rider on the CCC Sprandi Polkovici team, a team that we've not really mentioned, but he's ridden consistently well and finished up overall. Where did he finish, Daniel?
I don't know, Richard. You're about to tell us.
He finished 12th. That's pretty solid, isn't it? A few Alla Zubeldias. I mean, I nominated Maxime Montfort. He slipped to 13th at the end. But one could argue that Davide Formolo, who finished 10th, was this year's Alla Zubeldia.
Shall we step into the hurt locker?
Everybody hurts.
It's been a real breakthrough for you this Giro d'Italia. Really a big moment in your career. How happy are you?
For sure, I'm happy because I think nobody expected that I will be strong in last week like what I did. So yeah, me and also our team, we are really happy, and we think that we show really good performance. We did nice race here, and not just like small team which should be not here.
Does it make you think that you could be a top five rider in a Grand Tour in the future?
This is a difficult question, you know. Now I know that I do still a lot of mistakes, you know, so I have to still learn a lot and make better a lot of things like TT and this thing. So yeah, we have to still learn a lot, and this is, for this question I cannot answer now, but what would be for sure nice.
And people have watched you in the last 3 weeks, and they've seen that you rode for Etics as an under 23 and a Leopard Trek, and they're asking themselves, why isn't he riding for a World Tour team now? What's the answer?
I don't know, you have to ask these sport directors from these big teams, you know. I was like, somebody told me already that is like sure that I will pass to this team, and in the end was every time nothing, so I don't know. I was also really disappointed for this, but yeah, now happened this, and I think everything comes back in good way, so.
And next year you have a contract with CCC, or next year World Tour maybe?
Yeah, maybe we will see now what will be now, you know. This year I have last year with CCC contract, so now this was also fight for a new contract.
So that was Jan Hurt, Rich, talking there about...
Well, any relation to the late John?
No, I don't think so. Slightly aggrieved that he's not riding at a higher level, that he's not riding for a World Tour team. You heard him there. He has been riding for his contract, for his future at this Giro d'Italia. Do you know where I think he's going to go, Rich? I think he's going to go to Bahrain Merida, because his agent is Johnny Carrera, whose former partner in crime or business partner was... Alex Carrera, who has become the sort of general manager of Bahrain Merida. So a lot of riders in that stable are going to end up at Bahrain Merida. I think Hurt's going to end up there.
Before anybody writes in, I know that Jan Hurt's name is spelled differently to John Hurt, the actor. Just clear that up.
You are listening to the Cycling Podcast at the Giro d'Italia, supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
I wanted to clear up a few loose ends today at the finish, so I sought out Lucas Postelberger, who some of you will remember all the way back in Sardinia, won the first stage, clipped off the front, and surprised and disappointed all the sprinters, took the first Maglia Rosa, first stage win in his first Grand Tour. And he's an Austrian, his first ever Austrian stage win at the Giro, remarkably. And anyway, I found him at the finish. We did a kilometre zero about him as well, our first kilometre zero, so a lot of you will have heard that. Here's what Lucas Postelberger, who survived to Milan, had to say.
We spoke at the start of the Giro. It seems like a long time ago.
Yeah, it was really long. It's really long time ago. 3 weeks in total, so...
But you made it. Your first Grand Tour, first Maglia Rosa of the race. The other goal you must have had was to get to Milan.
Not a specific goal, but I tried my best, and what happened. So it's like a good basement I can build on, so we will see what's going on in next years.
And we saw you, I asked you after you won your stage whether that performance might change you. We saw you very active in a lot of breakaways, very aggressive. Did you feel you were riding with more confidence?
Yeah, for sure. But I was also, you know, the plan for me was before to go to riding aggressive and go in the breakaways. But for sure, when you know that people know who you are and kind of support me more, so it's more motivation for me. And it was more self-confidence for sure, yeah.
What was the hardest moment?
Yesterday I tried again to go in the breakaway, and I was nearly there. It was just 20 meters to go, you know, but in the peloton they were all chasing, and it was like no structure. Everybody wants to go and race full gas. Also the last day, you know, I was kind of ahead, really, because now we had the third week, and the last 5 days was full gas from start to the finish every day, and this was running on my nerves, really. It was hard, and I hope this never happened again.
We spoke to your mother as well. She was following you around. Did she make it all the way to Milan?
Yeah, she made all the way. She was here in the finish, but now she's on her way home.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much. Thanks.
Via mia esce ballo, mamma mia, non forza ci, come manca la gunella per potere comparire.
Darren's 10 down, we're talking just as Tom Dumoulin's about to start his final time trial. But what is your best memory of this Giro d'Italia?
I hope it's still to come. So when he's in the Maglia Rosa on the podium, but right now I don't dare to say anything about that, to be honest. I really don't know. It's so close. I didn't sleep last night, but because it's out of my hands, you know, I cannot help the guy anymore, and he has to do what he's best in, and I hope he finishes.
Joe Dombrowski of Cannondale Drop Pack. Probably Pierre's stage win. That was good. We did have a good celebration at dinner. It was nice.
Jan Bartha and Tim Bora Hansgrohe. Maybe it will be tomorrow in the evening if it's done.
Maximo Fora, Lotto Soudal. I think it's my TT when I finished seventh. It was a long time that I could race so good on the TTs. That was a nice feeling.
Julien Bernard, Trek Segafredo. The start, because in Sardinia was an amazing moment with a lot of people, and it was really nice to see all this. Also the weather, because the weather, we are really lucky this year. With no rain, this is a good moment also.
Andrew Hood, Velo News European correspondent. I mean, for me, my favorite part of this Giro was the Dolomites. Having that great weather, going over the Passo Sella, Val Gardena, it just really, for me, that is like the holy ground of the Giro. I mean, if it's like the pave for the cobbles, for the classics, to me, the Giro is personified and really captured by the Dolomiti. And to have that weather, especially for me, was just the highlight of the Giro. And it really makes me want to come back to this area and ski. It's always been on my bucket list, and maybe someday I'll do it.
Filippo Pozzato, Team Villa Triestina, Salitalia. The very nice is with the public, because the people is very hot for the rider, and this is the best moment for sure. For me, I try today and go to the breakaway because the finish line is near my country, and I have too much people today for see me in the finish stage. I try. It's 3 years. I don't have the victory, but I think I have the most fun in the group, and this for me is very good. I race one more year, and I feel good. It's okay.
I'm Rupert Guinness, Australian journalist. I'd have to say the verbal niggle that went between Dumoulin and Nibali, because it sort of reinforced that the traditional sense of rivalry is still there, the passionate rivalry is still there, and it does unfold out of the bike race. These words are said, albeit sometimes at the heat of the moment, but to me that shows a good spark that I thought was getting lost in the world of political correctness.
Dave Brailsford, Team Sky Principal. The obvious highlight is Mikel Stegeman yesterday. As a race, I think the island hopping work, logistically it was difficult. The start was good. They didn't have the usual kind of prologue team time trial. I think that worked. I think that worked really well. And I think the race has kind of built a momentum. I enjoyed the little couple of days in Sicily. It gave you a real flavour of Italy. And for the non-Italians, it does genuinely feel like it's been a tour of Italy rather than just a glimpse of some of Italy. But I think I guess my kind of overall memory will be when the team loses GC, you either react in, everybody knows what to do in terms of how to react, but it's difficult to actually do it. I think I'll take away from this the reaction of the team and how they've kept on knocking on the door. And in sport, if you can keep on knocking on the door and get your energy right and get your mindset right and just keep on knocking, it will open, it eventually opens, it always does.
Ciro Scognamiglio from Gazzetta dello Sport, dear listeners. So, best memory of my Giro d'Italia, without any doubt, the breakaway of Pippo Pozzato in the stage number 20. Why? When the breakaway started, I already knew that Pozzato for sure was not really able to win. So I was sure of this, because between me and Pippo there is a pact. Pippo can't win. There is something that already talk about, and I now is convinced of this. For him, it's not necessary to win as the other riders. So I was sure, and this moment will remain forever in my heart in this Giro d'Italia number 100.
The first voice we heard there was that of Laurens ten Dam, and that was a selection of writers and journalists picking their moments of the 100th Giro.
Yeah, and it was interesting, Rich, to watch Laurens ten Dam or to observe him over the course of this year. I got the impression, I spoke to him at the start of last year when he joined Sunweb, and I really got the impression that he was kind of almost on a valedictory.
Semi-retirement.
He was. He'd moved to the United States with his family. He had very valid reasons for moving to the United States. I mean, I think before his kids went to school, he wanted to sort of broaden their horizons slightly. But at the same time, and he admitted this to me earlier in the Giro, it was also about escaping slightly from the pressure that had been created in Holland after his ninth place in the 2014 Tour de France. Yeah, I mean, he was almost demob happy, and he didn't seem to be necessarily that focused on racing objectives. But, you know, as he told me earlier in the Giro, I think as time has gone on, he's refocused and he's rediscovered his love for the sport, and he's been a key player for Tom Dumoulin.
Well, Daniel, we've heard some of the riders and our colleagues' finest moments of the Giro. What are yours, or what are ours?
I think overall I've enjoyed the fact that this Giro, pretty much as Dave Brailsford said in that compilation, has touched every region of Italy, and it's still such a diverse country. As we discussed in our pre-Giro friend special, you know, it's a new country. It's a country that's only really existed since the 1860s. And it's fascinating to travel the whole length of the country, which is a luxury we don't often get on the Giro. Often it's pretty much confined to the northern half of Italy. And I've enjoyed that, and I think that's important. I like the fact that the Giro has wanted, and Maraveni, the race director, has wanted to honour and sort of reflect the whole of Italy in this 100th edition. I think the route, as we discussed last night, at times it's been on the long side. I think the stages have been on the long side. And I think when we go back and look at this Giro in a few years' time, we will see this, not as an anachronism, but one of the last Giri of this nature with 200-kilometre stages, as many climbs as there have been. I think it's going to change quite radically over the next few years. And as far as the composition's concerned, I think it's reflected the continuing trend towards gaps becoming narrower and narrower and narrower in professional cycling as teams become more and more professional. However much countries in Europe have suffered economically over the last few years, cycling has got richer and richer and richer. The team budgets have got bigger and bigger, and more money's been invested in, you know, it's a dirty word now, but marginal gains. And I think sometimes that's to the detriment of the spectacle. I mean, if you look at women's cycling now, women's cycling has been neglected and underfunded for decades and decades. And you get these fantastic races where, you know, they're attacked in the first half of races, and it's very the hierarchy is very clear. There are some riders who are clearly better than the others, and in men's cycling we don't really see that anymore. We see, you know, the differences that made the time gaps are usually a matter of a few seconds, and it's more of a sort of game of, well, it's a slow boiling game of chess, isn't it?
Well, it was certainly a slow boiling Giro, but it came nicely to the boil in the final week, and those margins are so small. I mean, the top three within a minute of each other. That's remarkable. Also, just there was a lot of talk about, you know, Quintana would need a minute and a half on Dumoulin in this stage, and that was pretty accurate. 1:39 was the margin between them. Didn't mention Zakarin, Ilner Zakarin, who I think was my tip to finish on the podium. He had a disappointing day, 1:49 down, and Pino had a disappointing day. But we didn't see any collapse. I mean, those guys rode consistently well throughout, and I keep saying that often in the top 10 there are riders who you've not noticed in the race, and that hasn't been the case here.
Yeah, and as I said, Rich, the whole concept of marginal gains has almost been derided, particularly in recent months, but loath as I am to revisit that particular episode, but when Tom Dumoulin did stop to go to the toilet, you know, if he'd taken 40 seconds longer to do what he had to do, then
he'd have lost the Giro.
He would have lost the Giro. And, you know, the same applies to Thibaut Pinot getting ill. Apparently, Steve Morabito told me, because of air conditioning. You know, Grand Tours, the fate, the destiny of Grand Tours could hinge on the dial of an air conditioning unit.
They're tiny. I mean, I consider this morning, I look back, as I said earlier, you move on so quickly in Grand Tours. There's no real, we analyse the stage, the night of the stage, and then we move on and it's forgotten about. It's why it's so rewarding as journalists sometimes to go back and look afresh at a particular stage or a particular race and really dig into what actually happened. And I think one stage will be the Stelvio stage this year, where Dumoulin had his moment. That'll be a stage where we can go back later and not maybe revisit the scene of the crime, but go back and there'll be details about that, things that happened on the road, things that happened in the lead up to that we don't know at the moment, and we'll be able to find that out later on. But a stage that strikes me as a real turning point in this Giro was the stage to Blockhouse. I wasn't here then, I was at home, but everybody talked about, you know, the motorbike parked outside the road that took out Wilco Kelderman, potentially a crucial loss for Tom Dumoulin, also Geraint Thomas and Mikel Landa. Obviously Landa's ridden extremely well this final week. Who knows how Geraint Thomas would have got on? People dismiss him as a GC rider, but 2 years ago people would have dismissed Tom Dumoulin as a GC contender. The other incident on that day, though, was one that I've been thinking about today, was Vincenzo Nibali, who's finished this Giro very, very strong. That day he did what Contador often does, and he tried to follow Quintana and you know, trade blows with him, and he paid for that, and he lost some time, quite a considerable amount of time on that climb. And had he not lost that time, he might have won this Giro.
You know, if he'd ridden that one climb in a more measured way and finished with Dumoulin Pinot, I haven't got the calculations exactly in front of me, but he was close enough that he may have won the Giro.
Well, and Rich, talking of trading blows, what about Javi Moreno being chucked out of the race in the first week of Vincenzo Nibali's Domestique? Who knows if he'd been on the Paso Gardena instead of Konstantin Siutsu the other day. Bahrain attempted this kind of bridge tactic and it didn't work, but you know, Nibali was a man down from the start. And meanwhile, Diego Rosa stayed in the race after that particular altercation, and Eugenio Alafaci of Trek stayed in the race after throwing a bottle at Rory Sutherland. So again, Rich, it's these fine, very fine margins.
Can I just add a detail?
Go on. Daniel?
So Nibali lost, he lost a minute on the day to Blockhouse to Quintana and 36 seconds to Dumoulin, who also got a time bonus on that stage. He finished in the end 40 seconds down. So the margin, had he ridden that, I mean, and Dumoulin didn't drop Nibali on any other climb, really. He rode well at Europa, obviously. But I think we can say that Nibali was the match of Dumoulin on the climbs. Had he ridden that climb a little bit more sensibly and not misjudged his own abilities to go with Quintana at that particular moment, we might be talking about Nibali as Giro winner. Okay, Daniel, well, I think you've got another cut. You did a couple more interviews from the finish day, didn't you? You got our Maglianera.
I have. Giuseppe Fonzi, hey. We were one of the first. We were among the first to latch onto this ridiculous, puerile, childish gag, which doesn't really have any legs anymore. But Fonzi has also cottoned on himself, the Villa Celitalia rider. He really had designs on the black jersey. So the black jersey, that's the last rider on general classification, I think pretty early in the race. And he's pulled it off. He's pulled it off. As one Italian journalist said to him today, you went slow. You were bad in Sicily, Sardinia. You were bad in the south. You were bad in the north. Congratulations on taking the black jersey all the way to Milan. But he didn't show up for the final time trial today in Monza in a black jersey. He actually showed up in a black leather jacket in homage to the eponymous
Fonzi
of Happy Days. Anyway, here was Fonzi at the finish line in Milan in Piazza del Duomo this afternoon.
Giuseppe, happy days. Today is a very happy day because the Giro is finished. I am very happy to stay here, and now I come back home to rest day.
And what's been your best memory of the Giro?
When the team say me, you are in the team for the Giro.
And the worst?
I was in the Stelvio because it's very, very hard to climb.
And one last time.
Hey, I am Fonzi.
We haven't really talked a lot, Daniel, about the stage winner, Jos van Emden, who gave me one of my quotes of the Giro.
Have we mentioned him?
We mentioned him in the first part. But he was, you go back and listen to last year's Giro podcast. I think one of the episodes opened with his expletive-laden outburst at the top of one of the climbs. He hadn't had a good day. Anyway, he won today, strong time trialist. And another guy who was up there in his final Giro was Manuel Quinziato. And you spoke to him, Daniel. Here he is.
Manuel, you told me a few days ago that you wanted to enjoy this Giro and savour it as much as possible. Have you succeeded in that over the last 3 weeks?
Yeah, I can say so. Also, I had really some bad days in the stage, like 7th, 8th stage. For some reason, at the end, the body is a bit like that, mysterious sometimes. And the last week, you know, at the end, I just had to survive, and the shape was good enough, so I could even save some energy for today. And today, I really gave everything. Yeah, my first goal was to cross the line in the fast possible time. Then the result is a matter of the competitors. It's a really high level of competitors.
Has there been any room or time for emotion today?
No, not yet. The only moment in this 21 day was yesterday. I was riding alone to the sign-in, and suddenly I realized it was the last time I was signing in a Grand Tour in the Giro. And for a moment, I had just a moment of, I felt a bit nostalgic. But then we started 55 km per hour, so it was okay.
And often when riders retire, they say that they feel this isn't their world anymore, the peloton's changed, riders have changed. But it seems to me, from what you told me the other day, that you feel that you're ready for something else, not that you've fallen out of love with cycling.
No, I think that's really important. I was having a nice conversation yesterday with Prideler, a guy from Sunweb, we were talking about smart rider and less smart rider. And he told me, yeah, maybe sometimes being stupid is good for bike riding. I say, no, I think being smart is good. And then life goes beyond being a cyclist, so it's better. It's better to prepare to do something else. Like, at the end, I was never happy just with being a bike rider. I studied, and I was always interested in other things. And I think this is very important. And always Prada told me that I inspire him to keep on with his studies. I think that's really important because we have time. If we are enough motivated, we can achieve other goals. Tonight, I'm going to skip my last part in a Grand Tour. I had enough fun the previous years. My wife is here with the baby, so we're going to sleep close to the airport. And tomorrow we fly back to Madrid. Perfect evening.
That was Quinziato, Rich. And to be honest, I was a bit surprised there wasn't a bit more fanfare about him finishing his final Giro. You know, he's been a popular figure over the years, a real stalwart in the Italian peloton for the last 16 years. And it was just me and one of the journalists there to greet him as he came over the line. He's going to be an agent next year. There are more and more agents in professional cycling. A few years ago, the market was dominated by about four guys. There was someone who dominated in Holland and Belgium, someone who dominated in France, and a pair of brothers, the Carrera brothers in Italy, and now they are springing up all over the place.
Maybe we should become agents.
Maybe we should.
Listen, before we sign off from the Giro, before today's stage, this morning in Milan, we picked up another guest for our Maserati, gave him a little drive through the quiet-ish streets of Milan. It was Jonathan Edwards, the former triple jumper, still the world record holder, now who's just done his first Grand Tour presenting for Eurosport. I thought it'd be interesting to get his perspective on his debut Grand Tour. Here he is, Jonathan Edwards.
The cycling podcast on the road at the Giro d'Italia with Maserati.
Welcome to the Maserati, Jonathan.
Yes.
See what it's capable.
Yeah, but Galaxy doesn't sound like that.
You've been roughing it around Italy for 3 weeks with Eurosport, so we thought we'd treat you to a bit of luxury on the last day.
It's a bit late in the day, I have to say. You could have offered this a bit earlier.
I think we did, but you weren't available.
Oh, right, okay, fair enough.
Jonathan, approaching the end of your first Grand Tour, how's it been?
It's been incredible. I mean, the race has been amazing, obviously, but the whole experience, I was pretty nervous, to be honest. I mean, firstly about the broadcasting, you know, I've never done a Grand Tour before, as you say, but also just being away from home for the best part of a month, different hotels every night, long transfers. I've sort of kind of got into an alternate reality. It's like nothing else exists, you know, elections, Trump, all the stuff that, you know, occupied my mind before I was leaving. It's almost like it hasn't happened, or it's just happening somewhere else.
I'll test you, what day is it?
It is Sunday, it's the last day, but I did forget that it was my birthday, 10th of May. And on the 9th of May, I got a text from a friend saying, happy birthday for tomorrow. And I had genuinely forgot that it was my birthday the next day.
Curious to know, because you're into cycling. When did you get into cycling and how?
I think my first intro into road cycling was when I went to America to train in 1995 before the Atlanta Olympics. I went to Tallahassee, which is the holding camp for the British Olympic Association. I met a British guy out there called Gary, who was just like mad keen on this cycling. And I actually used to do some driving, sort of pacing him. He was sort of sitting behind me, and I would drive along these empty American roads, and he would do a few sessions.
I mean, what are your impressions of the sport being up close like this? I mentioned to you the other day that we did an interview this week with Michael Woods, who's a former runner, middle distance runner. He came to cycling pretty late. Charlie Wigelius, his director, made was that athletes race compete so seldom compared to cyclists that he's very, very good at training and getting himself into condition, whereas cyclists tend to rely more on racing and perhaps historically haven't been so good at training. People often bracket athletics and cycling together as sort of endurance sports, but what kind of differences have you been struck by?
Well, this is obviously completely different from what I did. And Michael Woods, you know, who's a good miler, so he's got that endurance background, and he put in the hours and hours of training and working on things like his VO2 max and the like, whereas I did nothing like that. So it is a completely different world. It's a brutal sport. Comment from Charlie Wigelius of getting used to training, lots of training, and then peaking for maybe one or two competitions. It's completely different here. You know, you're riding for 3 weeks in a Grand Tour, and then there'll be stage races, and if you're Quintana, you're doing another Grand Tour, and it's just endless. So it is a completely different mindset. It's a form of torture, frankly. I would see it. It's just, and how they do it, I really don't know. And day after day, produce the kind of racing that we've seen. You know, the little bit of cycling I've done. You know, I know you're going up a climb and it's hurting. And I did the Stelvio here, not that I want to boast on air, but I did ride the Stelvio on Juan Antonio Fletcher's bike, which had a 36-27 lowest ratio, which wasn't nearly enough for me, so I was grinding up. And you just know what it's like when it hurts. You know, the bravery of these guys and their ability to endure pain. I mean, I have no ability to do that, so I'm in awe of that.
You undersell yourself a little bit, Jonathan. You're the first world record holder we've had in the car this Giro. I remember a great comment, observation. I think it was Mark Cavendish made it. He was comparing himself to Chris Hoyt. You know, they're both sprinters, but as you say, it's very different. He said that his great ability was the ability to suffer, whereas Hoy's ability was the ability to hurt himself. And I guess that's an interesting distinction. Is that one that you recognise? Because, you know, you must have trained hard, and in your training it would have been not about suffering but about hurting, or in your sport, technique as well.
Yeah, I didn't really hurt or suffer. I mean, apart from mentally. Of course, I had a few sessions which weren't much fun, but the technique training or the sprint training or the weight training was all about, you know, one-off maximum effort, rather than actually going out and thinking, right, I'm going to have to do 10 times 400 metres and be puking up at the end of it. Or, I mean, in my cycling now, you know, I have a relatively structured session, so I might do a 5-minute all-out effort. And I hate it. I'm going into, I'm thinking, it's only 5 minutes, and you're in 2.5 minutes, and I often just stop because it's hurting too much. And I never did that.
Sounds like Lionel. You sound like Lionel Burney here.
And I just think, oh, especially as it doesn't mean anything now because I'm just doing it for fitness and recreation. I think, why would I put myself through this? And maybe that's the thing. If you've got a reason to do it, then you can find the motivation. But yeah, I hate pain.
Imagine riding your bike every day.
Well, exactly. That's the thing. I think that is my overriding impression of this, is quite how remarkable the riders are, day after day after day after day, just putting their bodies through that. You know, probably not the best condition. I mean, I've seen where some of the teams have stayed. It's no better than where we're staying. It's not luxury five-star stuff. You know, sharing on a coach ain't much fun either, is it? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a tough life.
So are athletes, track and field athletes, more pampered, do you think?
I think it's just the logistics of it, isn't it? You know, I'd come to Milan and I'd jump in a competition. You know, I'd fly in one day, I'd stay in a really nice hotel. That was the other thing, they share rooms. I would never share a room. So the idea of sharing a room with somebody for 3.5 weeks is not a pleasant one at all, apart from my wife.
So what's your prediction for the podium? Give us the podium.
Dumoulin, Pinot, Nibali.
These words might haunt you.
Almost certainly.
We are on the road at the Giro d'Italia with Maserati. Visit maserati.co.uk to find out more about the new Levante, the Maserati of SUVs, yours from £56,250 on the road.
That was Jonathan Edwards. And anything to add, Daniel?
Well, seamlessly.
Always got stuff. To
well,
add,
no, Rich.
You?
I mean, you know, you asked. I think you asked me earlier about you know, personal highlights of the Giro, what I particularly enjoyed. I can't really remember whether you did or you didn't, but you should have.
I did.
Oh, you did.
I did.
When we scripted this episode, it was supposed to come in the first tranche. Anyway, yeah, I was really pleasantly surprised and quite astonished, really, to find it. A whole community in Calabria, an Albanian community which has existed since the 16th century, or it might be 15th century. I have to go back and look at my notes. And we, Lionel and I, ate some fantastic Albanian food that night. And again, just highlighting the diversity of Italy. And you know, it's been a real journey through the history of Italy. We had a great chat with the ambassadors for Parmigiano Reggiano in Reggio Emilia, stayed in a fantastic place there. Rich, unfortunately, you weren't there, the Agriturismo. But, you know, I actually wrote something the other day for Pro Cycling Magazine about how I think Italy, well, the Giro is more of a showcase for the country, for Italy, for the tourist industry than is the Tour de France in France and the Vuelta in Spain. And I think that this is probably the way that the Giro needs to go. For a few years, it seemed that the Giro was maybe pandering to a global audience and they were slightly desperate and they, you know, emphasizing and sort of using these slogans like the hardest race in the most beautiful place. But more and more when you're here, it really feels as though that is, you know, how the Giro needs to or can combine the sporting aspect with the sort of with an audience that's maybe new to cycling. The Italian audience in particular, I think, has really come out in this Giro in force and is falling back in love with the race. And I think it's kind of getting its self-esteem and its self-confidence back, and they're enjoying showing the race to the world. And I think they're very conscious of that this is a fantastic showcase for Italy.
Well, I think that's a key point. I think the people are absolutely crucial to the Giro d'Italia. There's a real sense, and you've talked about this a lot, Daniel, that Italians are quite keen to know what other people think of them. They're quite keen. There's a sort of neediness there in a lot of cases.
Absolutely, 100%.
You know, and that has led in some ways to compromises. Like they embrace English language and dilute the Italian-ness of the Giro in some respects in doing that. And I don't, even though I don't speak Italian, I want the Giro to be Italian. I want to hear Italian. I want to read Italian. I want it to be Italian. But there's no doubt that the Italians themselves, we talk about the crisis in Italian cycling, one Italian stage win, not an Italian, no Italian World Tour team. But actually, the international flavour of the Giro is something the Italians themselves probably like. I mean, I think there were 12 different countries represented among the stage winners, which I think is close to a record, if it's not a record. And that's new, obviously. That's been quite a recent phenomenon. But it's not, I don't sense that it's something that the Italians feel as a threat. It's more an endorsement of their race and their country.
No, and I think they're understanding much better how Italy provides a stage for the race, and the actors might come from other places. The actors might not be Italian, but as long as they provide that fantastic stage. And, you know, Lionel and I talked a lot about the wine trial, and, you know, you can roll your eyes and think that that's a gimmicky idea, but it is actually something that, you know, the wine industry, the food industry, it's a real asset that Italy has. And I think, as I say, they're understanding much better how to showcase and leverage that with the Giro.
Daniel, I suspect this has been a very long episode, but probably fitting because it's the final one. And
you ain't going to hear from us for a while.
You're
not going
to hear from us for a little bit. But also, it's been a great, I think it's been a great Grand Tour. You've awarded it 4 wine glasses, slightly mean perhaps, but then 5 wine glasses.
It was a low 4 as well, Richard.
A low 4?
I was between a 3 and a 4.
What's a 5? There have been no 5s in your experience.
No, but I think, you know, I get a lot of flack for this on social media. And, you know, I don't just take into consideration the drama in the GC battle. It's also the quality of the sprinting.
What's the wine glass Tour de France?
Yeah, there is. 2003, I think, is the only 5 wine glass Tour de France. You know, the quality in the sprint stages, there were a lot of innocuous a lot of pretty drab stages in the first part of this race when a couple of riders were down the road, usually from Gazprom and CCC. But also, you know, it's about the story the race tells. It's about the story of the country the race tells. And I think the Giro has done very well on that score, and it's been very, very close, and there have been some great stages. But
we've seen some great performances.
We have seen some great performances.
And we've seen the emergence of a new champion who's charismatic and
but no way is it a 5.
With fantastic cheekbones and great hair.
Yeah, no way is it a 5.
Okay, fine. Well, listen, before we say our farewells or arrivederci's from Milan, a few thank yous. Well, first of all, we have to thank our main sponsor, Rafa. We're very grateful indeed to them. Also, our other sponsors, Science and Sport, and All Press Espresso, who sponsored Kilometer Zero. Hope you enjoyed our 9 episodes of Kilometer Zero. Thanks very much indeed also to Maserati, who supplied us with a beautiful Quattroporte car, which we are returning completely unscathed. Not that we haven't in the past, but it's...
We've got an underground car park to get out of first.
It's looking every bit as beautiful now as it was when we took delivery of it. Thank you very much to our fantastic team of producers, They do a brilliant job every night. Tom Wally, John Mooney, Adam Bowie, Paul Scoynes, Alex Eady, Matt Field, Will Jones and Mariana DeForge. Thank you very much to them. Thanks to Nick Christian and Jonathan Rowe, who do lots of things behind the scenes to keep us going. Thanks to Simon Gill for his wonderful photography. Thanks to David Luxton, who looks after all our sponsorship and other concerns. And a huge thank you to friends of the podcast, all of you who have signed up at thecyclingpodcast.com to become a friend for the year to receive exclusive episodes, 11 documentary style episodes, and there'll be more of those coming soon. But as well as getting access to those, you help us hugely to cover the grand tours. We did it for the first time last year, covering all three. We are doing it again this year, and in large part that's thanks to all of you who have signed up, so thank you very much indeed.
Music.
Yes, now I was moving on to that. You do the music, Daniel. Thank you for the music.
Amara Terra and Dina Zandigu.
Dina Zandigu,
who has provided a fair amount of music for us in the last few days, and we're thinking of making him an offer for
making
next year.
Making him an offer, yeah. And 13 Senses, who provide the wonderful soundtrack to Kilometre Zero, and Kilometre Zero would not sound the same without the 13 Senses track. So thank you very much indeed to them. And I think that's about it, Daniel. Oh, and we almost forgot. Thanks to Lionel Burney. Cheers, Napalm.
Thank you, Richard.
Time to say arrivederci.
Alla prossima. Till next time.